This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest 3, and I'm here with Wheelie Pete at Wheelie Dealer.
Hello.
On Twitter. This is episode 101. We had all the shenanigans and all the silliness and all the fun and all the celebration of Twin Peaks Podcast 100. The last time, and we had a crowd of people on the screen, and we had lots of chat, lots of Q&A, fantastic guests in Jason at StealthServe and Algy at Algy Hall on Twitter, and they were absolutely phenomenal. And we also had 22 guests that were in the audience watching, and then we had a couple of questions from them as we're going as we went through 100, the podcast number 100. And then I thought that was it. We'll have a quick chat for 10 minutes. And then it ran on until 11:44 p.m. to be precise. And if I hadn't said, that's it, guys, ladies, we need to just call it a quits, we'd have gone into the next day, I'm sure of it. And now everyone's saying, oh, we need to do this once a month or once every couple of months. And I'm like, okay, you know what? If you all want to get together and help me put this together and help me in the background, yeah, then that'll be fine. We can do it every now and then, you know, but no one's volunteered yet. So
anyone that's
one of our Twitter listeners, our social media listeners, our other platform listeners, Spotify listeners, YouTube listeners, etc., etc., that want to help me put together Zoom calls with 20 to 50 to 99 individuals, please send me a DM at Conquest3, because I'd love to have the help, because I'm absolutely shredded, as my daughter would say. Very tired, that means. Anyway, Pete, I'm babbling. Welcome, mate. You've had a few things. First of all, get it out of the way. Don't talk about it too long, because I don't want to be on this for ages.
Yeah.
Tell people about your nose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Mate, before we do that, on TPI 100, I chickened out at about 10:30. And when I spoke to you later on and found out you've been still going on, I was just like,
I spoke to you X amount of days later, because you were knackered after doing that till 10:30. It was days after I spoke to you, mate.
So, do you know, when I came off that call, I mean, it must have been nearly 2 hours we were doing the actual call, and I was drained at the end of that. And then to have had quite a long discussion afterwards with everyone on the call, which was brilliant, it was exhausting. I was just so trashed, but it was great. And if you haven't listened to TPI 100, look back through the archive. It's obviously the next one down. Well worth going for. Yeah, man.
The thing I must say, Pete, is that what did it for me? And we'll get onto the bit that you want to say in a minute.
Yeah.
Was that 100 had the interactive sort of video screen sharing stuff. So Jace was doing his charting for those that haven't watched it. And he talked about a couple of stocks, and he showed where he was looking for the breakouts, and he showed the steps up, and he talked about risk factors, and he talked about when he exited, and he talked about stocks slowing down. And Algy Hall came on and did his chat about his book, which I've got in the background here, and I'll talk about that a bit later on.
Yeah.
And talked about how to go about finding the best stocks, and people were asking him questions about how he finds quality shares and all the rest of it. And it was brilliant. But boy, oh boy, everyone was like, and we were literally 5 hours of doing that, and it could have carried on, you know. And I said to Pete as well, is that had we been to the pub anywhere in the UK and people had traveled to the pub, they probably would have left at 9 o'clock to get home. But because they're actually already at home, comfortable in their front rooms and their, you know, side rooms, or, you know, in their bedrooms, whatever they were. I think people spotted one person that was near a bath or in a bathroom.
Bathroom.
We won't talk about that. It meant that they were relaxed. They had beers in front of them. They had coffee, tea, biscuits, whatever. And they were just chilled out. So they was like, yeah, let's carry on talking. I was like, My gosh, but brilliant. Thank you ever so much for every single one of you. Guys, it was all guys, wasn't it? That were on the call, that were our guests. Brilliant. And we will try and do it again going forward, but we're going to tweak a few things going forward anyway. So we'll see how that pans out. So yeah. Sorry, Pete, I interrupted you.
Absolutely.
So
oh, no. Well, we were just going to throw in quickly that I had a nightmare weekend where I had to have these, because of my health problem, I've had to have these tests done where they put a tube down my nose and they do like a 30-minute test. And then I had to go home for 24 hours with like this box thing connected to a wire to my nose that was like measuring the acid going in and out of my stomach and stuff. And every time I ate, I had to press the button. And every time I felt a bit of pain or other symptoms, I had to press the button and I had to write it down and all sorts of stuff. But it was really funny because I'd been told by a nurse before that it was no big deal. They spray some anesthetic in your nose and the tube goes in, it's all doddle, you know? Of course, we came around to doing it. It was horrendous. And honestly, it was just so, I'm not sure if it was so much painful as just really uncomfortable. And the problem was, they had one nurse trying to put the thing in. She tried three times and couldn't get it in. And I'm just sat on this bed with one nurse one side, one nurse the other. I am just in tears and coughing and sneezing. They're both hugging me because they could see I was really going through it. And I thought we were going to end up giving up, you know, because they were starting to make noises like, we can't do this because we just can't get the thing in. And then luckily the other nurse tried it and she was a bit more vicious, but she got it in, which was brilliant. And then they did the half hour test. That was just horrendous. They would like put water in my mouth and I sort of had to hold it for like 30 seconds. And then they'd say swallow and I had to swallow. And then they'd pump another load of water in my mouth. Problem was, I wasn't getting any time to breathe in between. And I'm like passing out. I literally thought I'd be waterboarded. I mean, it was just, I can't tell you how nasty it was. I really don't want to go through that again. And then when they come to the end of it, they took the tube out. They said, oh, we've got to put another tube in now for the other test. I thought it'd be the same tube. So to go through it twice was not my idea of fun. And anyway, so if ever you've got to do that, people, beware, it's not pleasant. I do you know, I hate putting people off medical things because, you know, it's really important you haven't done, and most things are no big deal. But I've got to say that was bloody horrible. Really did not enjoy that.
You have to keep it in overnight, didn't you? How long did you have to keep it in and then take it back to the hospital?
Yeah, I had the tube in for 24 hours. And it was all right when I was driving home. It was a little bit awkward getting into my car and getting my wheelchair in and stuff. Because, of course, you've got this wire, you know, you don't want to snag it and things. It was all right. I got home. I was sort of okay with it. And then when I went to eat something, as soon as I swallowed, it was so painful. And I don't know, I sort of got used to that. I think I must have found a way of eating where it wasn't too bad. But then, of course, I go to bed. And like I'm lying in bed and I'm just getting heartburn. I can't get to sleep. And it was just horrible. But I went over onto my other side and luckily then it seemed to be easier and I managed to sleep then. And I actually slept really well, which was surprising. Of course, I wake up in the morning straight away. It's like, oh, my God, this thing's still in my nose. And all I could think about all Saturday morning was I couldn't wait till 1 o'clock when I was allowed to get the damn thing out and I could take the data box back to the hospital and all that. But it was just bloody horrible, mate.
Well, I'm glad that ordeal is over with, mate. And hopefully you'll get some data that tells you what the solutions are and get it remedied.
Hopefully this will actually identify what the problem is and then, you know, that I mean, if it doesn't identify, it's going to be immensely frustrating, but you know, it is what it is. I don't expect to hear anything for a couple of weeks or whatever because all these things take time, but yeah, you know, hopefully we'll get a solution.
Cool beans, cool beans. Okay, we're going to move on now, folks, to talk about the markets. And send your wishes and prayers to Pete that he gets something sorted out in the next couple of weeks. When we spoke on podcast 100, we did actually speak about the markets, didn't we, a little bit? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I'm sure we
and
did.
we were, we were sitting at the markets. The markets were sitting at having we've rolled over some months ago now from our highs in February, which were 8,047, the intraday high, I think. So rolled over to 7,773, I think the last podcast, I think is what I said. We've not moved, we've ebbed and flowed a little bit, and we're still holding up. We finished today down 27 points at 7,023 for the FTSE 100. The FTSE All Share was down 14 points or 0.35% at 4,210. AIM is still holding up, but it's edging ever closer. The AIM All Share, it's at 809 today, down 2 points, down 0.35%. So everything's just sitting there almost at support levels. We don't want any bad news over the rest of May. And hopefully we get to the end of May without giving up 7,700 and 800 on the FTSE AIM share. Hopefully there'll be some good news going forward. Not helped by a series of profit warnings from various companies and a couple of takeovers that were meant to go through, not going through. But we'll talk about them a bit later on. First bit of news I want to talk about, Pete, is today's news. And bizarrely, there's a book in front of me. Which company I want to talk about, Pete?
I can't see it. What is that? It's like
Oh, the
purple,
colour, the colour, the colour.
purple bricks.
Purple Bricks,
Purple
yeah.
bricks, purple.
So Purple Bricks, ladies and gents, is a company that was floated 2016, if I remember rightly. And it was one that was seeded by Woodford, Mr. Woodford, and other people as well, other entities as well. I'll go into those entities as well a bit later on. So Neil Woodford's fund had a big chunk of change in it. And it basically listed at a valuation of about 255 million, right? Went on to be valued 1.5 billion, right? When everyone was saying it's going to come, it's going to disrupt Zoopla, it's going to disrupt Rightmove, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was going to be the disruptor of disruptors regarding the estate agency sort of model. And it needed to because these estate agents are getting paid a lot of money for not doing much. And this was going to be the company that did the business. Anyway, you've got a situation where the shares went from listing at a pound to climbing and climbing. And everyone's saying Woodford's an absolute miracle worker again. He's picked an absolute solid company. 5 years ago, worth 1.4 billion. Today, sold to one of its competitors called Strike for £1. And not £1 per share, but £1. The whole business
But
for a
hold on,
pound.
yeah.
From a valuation, of 1.4 billion to being sold for £1. And the concern with this is that there's two little online companies which are not profitable. Yeah, Strike is not profitable. Purple Bricks is not profitable. Purple Bricks has got 750 employees, 750 jobs. Those some a significant amount of them because of the crossovers regarding the both companies, duplications of both companies, means that quite a lot of those jobs could be at risk. Who were the people that were involved in that company in the past? Backed by Wonga founder, Capital's former CEO, Old Mutual, which later became Merian, Artemis, and others were involved in it. Now, I'm raising this company's journey from rise, fall, and bust, and so on and so forth, boom and bust, because there's been another sort of growth of companies over the during co during COVID lockdown. Two companies absolutely were f flying and worth billions, right? And those two companies, although there are more others in that space, are Cazoo
You
and
know,
Carvana.
yeah.
So in that car space, selling space, they're like, oh, we can do it online. You don't need to see your car. You know, just have a look at it online. We'll bring it to you. We'll take away your old one. Cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
And these companies at peak in 2020 and 2021 were worth, I've not put the figures out on my little thing I spread out, put out there, worth stupid amounts of money. A bit like Peloton was worth billions, up and down again. My concern is that if this is replicated for Purple Bricks and the online model does not work because people actually want to use a phrase, kick the tires, right? Then potentially Kazoo, which is worth billions at the moment, and Kavana, that was worth billions, but trickling down right now, could suffer the same fate as Purple Bricks over the course of the next 3 to 4 to 5 years. No, what do you think, Pete?
Well, I don't know if I put out a tweet about this about a week ago or whatever. And I basically said on it, the only thing that these disruptors ever seems to disrupt is the sleep of the investors who put money into them. Because they're just, I mean, it seems, I'm starting to think that if you see any company that claims to be a disruptor, especially if it's loss making and it's only been around for 6 months, year, 2 years, you've got to be wary. And I picked up on the Kazoo one, funnily enough, that you mentioned. And obviously Purple Bricks was one that sprang to my mind instantly. On Kazoo, I was watching Robert Forrester, who is the CEO of Vertu, VTU, the big car retailer. He was on Sky News on the Ian King thing, which is really 10 o'clock every morning, Sky News. You can get it on the Sky News app for nothing, even if you're not a Sky subscriber. I used to be a Sky subscriber and I kicked it into touch, but I can still get that. So that's really good. Turn that on at 10 o'clock. It runs for an hour. He has loads of CEOs and things on there and all sorts of stuff on there. So it's a right old higgledy-piggledy mix. Anyway, Robert Forrester was on there and he was talking about the disruptors and he mentioned Kazoo. And he said, they've only got 3% of market share in this country. And he said he thinks they won't get anywhere for the simple reason, as you said, the vast majority of car buyers want to go into the dealership. They want to be, you know, loved by the salespeople and the team. They want to have coffees. They want to discuss it. They want to be able to look around the car. They want to be able to go for extended test drives and whatever. You know, there is more to buying a car than just clicking on a link and saying, yeah, I'll have that Vauxhall Astra. It just doesn't work like that. And you know, I mean, you know, Kazoo have got 3% of what, well, those disruptors have got 3% of the market share between them. I mean, it's pathetic. That's an absolute joke, you know. So, yeah, beware of newfangled disruptors.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's a very important point to make, Pete, regarding some technologies coming out there and disruptors per se. I think there's other companies that have been around a bit longer than Purple Bricks that are still struggling now. You know, 2016, that's 7 years, mate, to get to profitability, and it struggled.
Do you know?
So one thing I was going to say was sometimes it's the marketing, Pete. You know, oh, Woodford's in it. Oh Artemis has got it. Oh, that's the CEO from former.
You nailed it.
Oh, Goldman Sachs or whoever is backing it. Whoever's backing it. And it's all that bandwagon of boom, boom, playing the drums and, you know, a nice beat to the music to get people to just, you know, Pied Piper to follow the tune and go, I'm buying it. I'm buying it.
You remember, and I'm sure everyone listening to this or watching it will remember, those Purple Bricks adverts. They were on the they were on the TV every 2 minutes. And it's the same with Kazoo. It's the same with Kazoo. They're on there all the time. How much money are they spending on this stuff? I mean, it's all just money out the door, nothing coming in, no profitability, no cash generation, just bad news. But
I mean,
do you know, reminds me of another sector, which is sort of a bit tangential, but it's a sector I think we've talked about before. And that is the likes of Just Eat and Deliveroo and all those. I really wonder if these things are ever really going to get proper traction and become proper cash generators. I really have my doubts. You know, I'm not convinced. And this idea that you ring up and get a bottle of milk from your, bought to you on a motorbike, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And it doesn't fit with the whole net zero and all the rest of it. I just think the whole thing's bonkers. I struggle to. It's like, it's one of those things that when times are good and when people have got money, yeah, they might spend a couple of quid to have a bottle of milk delivered, but they're not going to do it when no one's got any money. You know, it's, I don't know. It just strikes me.
You're right, Pete. And I think that, you know, I speak to students quite often, and I'm not being rude now when I say this, but there seem to be, I was a student once, but I was an adult student, and you were a student once, Pete.
Yeah,
and genuinely,
genuinely,
it's we're you know, other than studying and drinking, students are quite lazy. It's just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
So I'm speaking to them. It's like, yeah. If we want to if we run out of beer, we just ring up this app and it brings us another slab of beer and we crack on. If we want another, if we've not ordered enough pizza, we want another one, we'll order another. I'm like, wow. No one actually gets up and, you know, we do the drinking games and so you've lost, Pete, right? Yeah. So come, because you go and get, you have to go down the road and get another pizza, and you trundle off and you miss the party for an hour, and you come back with the pizza and everyone else eats it and you get the corner. You know what I mean? That's what used to happen. Yeah. Nobody wants to leave the party. No one wants to leave the hallowed turf or their house or the place where they're lodging for more than 2 minutes to go anywhere, to get anything. It's crazy. I digress. I'm conscious of the timing, and I want to keep this not too long. I don't want to do two hours, right? I want to quickly move on and talk about Memphis and the charity and what's going on and so on and so forth, if I may. Just throw this in early, right? Because I want to say a big, big, massive thank you to everybody. We've had a couple of extra, I think probably 20 people or so have signed up for the YouTube subscription, free subscription on YouTube, because I was asking everyone to just go on there, subscribe, whether or not you're on, whether or not you actually listen to us on YouTube, please subscribe.
That applies to all the platforms, really. If you regularly listen on a particular platform, if you can just hit subscribe, please, because it just helps us get the numbers up and to build the whole podcast into more of an audience and whatever, which is in all our interest to do that, because the more enthusiastic me and Pete are about it, the better the podcast will be for you, and the more we'll be infused to do them.
Absolutely. So with regards to the podcast, we've had day five, we had record numbers for the YouTube and all the other platforms. Day six, record numbers. Day seven, record numbers. So we had the first week where it was whoosh. I think our record actual podcast listens with video and everything else is about 5,600. We're on the cusp with this one to actually hit 4,000 by the time we get to the end of the week.
Brilliant.
So we're inching towards 4,000. But the beauty of it is that more people actually subscribe to YouTube. So our numbers are there and they're pushing up. We still need more people to subscribe to all the platforms, including YouTube, and leave your feedback if you can. But with regards to the Memphis thing, what I didn't do, and it's probably my error, so apologies for people that wanted to make a donation, is that I forgot to give you all the actual URL for the Memphis Just Giving page, because I'm conscious that despite us edging towards 4,000 downloads and YouTube listens and all the rest of it, we didn't get a single donation. So I know how you guys and ladies are and that you want to make a donation. So I'm just going to go here now and give you the name, and I'm going to have to remember to do this each week, so people hopefully remind me so people can leave a donation. We're sitting at 1,798 as we speak, excluding gift aid. So it'd be lovely to nudge over 1,800 and head towards 2,000, given that we're going to end up, by the time we do the next one, be in June, which will take us into halfway stage. So the Memphis Just Giving page is www.justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaksChallenge23, and you can make a donation on that, and it will go towards helping all the young people and disabled children's disability charity that I support. And my plan with this particular fundraise is to have the money going towards some of the projects which enable the children to receive additional services in the community. So that's going to be a variety of different projects that they're going to work on. And we're going to try and isolate, but specify which ones those are a bit closer to the date, because they're working on some projects now. And depending how well they do, they might continue to do them or do new ones for 2024. So I'll keep you, ladies and gents, updated. And I had a meeting on, well, I'm losing track of days now. Yesterday. Had a meeting. So I'm all over the place, mate. Sorry.
Wait, well, mate. Had a meeting yesterday. Yesterday was Tuesday, because we're recording We're recording this on Wednesday, the 17th of May. And we started about 7:30, yeah.
And we started late. So I met with the CEO and the head of fundraising and marketing yesterday. And we had a strategic discussion, because I'd spoken to the majors and ages ago, raised some money last time back in 21, lots of different backwards and forwards about the cinema project, and lots of different backwards and forwards about the fact that actually the reasons why I wanted to do the cinema project and the reason why it's been delayed for so long was A, the cost, and B, there was basically working on other bits and pieces to do. Eureka. We had a breakthrough a couple of months back. I think it was Mario Brothers a couple of months back. And we had Showcase Cinema give us the cinema on the Saturday after the Friday launch of Mario Brothers. Not 6 months later, when everyone else has seen it. So we had 2 days of Showcase Cinema, gave us an audience of 300 kids, family, blah, blah, blah. And they were seeing it literally within 24 hours of release.
So what's that? Is that kids and that who benefit from the Memphis charity, the good work they do, came into... Oh, brilliant.
They were able to go into the cinema, Pete, and have the full experience of the cinema rather than watching it on a laptop 6 months later.
Oh, that's super. Yeah, it's super.
Yeah.
Well done,
so
Showcase.
Showcase. And we've also got another company now that's wanting, because they've seen Showcase of it, wanting to help the charity.
So they were happy to say, Pete, come in. It's
in Leicestershire. Yeah. But we're hoping to build it so that something, there's a friend of mine I'm going to be speaking to. I won't say who it is right now in case it doesn't happen. We're trying to help other entities around the country to build it so that everywhere in the country there's a cinema that allows disabled children to be inclusive in a cinema or have a cinema day to themselves after a week or a couple of weeks after the release or the day after the release to watch it. Because there's nothing worse than everyone in the playground or wherever you are talking about a film that you can't see. Can't you go there? Because, you know, it's meant to be inclusive. Anyway, Pete, so with that meeting... What's going to happen with the monies that's been sitting there waiting to do the cinema project? It's going to go into a sensory room. They've already got a sensory room, but it needs updating. It's going to cost between 30 grand and about 50 grand to upgrade this sensory room that was built X amount of years ago.
And what's that?
That's where the money's going to go.
Deaf, dumb and blind kind of thing, is it? Or what is it?
So depending on the disability, hearing, visual, physical, anxiety, stress, you can go into a room. You have somebody there with you sometimes. They can help you. It can be the sound. Yeah? So the audio can help you just calm yourself down. Bit of meditation, stress. Helps with all manner of different things, Pete. Helps with balance.
Yeah.
And the actual cost of the equipment is astronomical.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And in certain situations, you've got people that have got various disabilities. They're not able to hold their weight even on a chair. You've got to put them in a hoist and then lower them down and all manner of different things to the floor. So all those sort of things, that's what we're going to spend the money on. That's been earmarked for nearly a year into a sensory room.
I've seen something about like deaf blind kids who obviously, you know, you imagine, right? Imagine being blind and being deaf. That's like the senses that most of us rely on so much are gone. You know, you don't have that. And so I think they have these they have like sensory, probably like sensory rooms, but sensory sort of like treatment or whatever. So to give them other sensation, to give them, you know, so which is quite amazing, really. That's brilliant.
So that's the meeting that we had. And then I went across to the charity shop and donation shop center. Where they sell some goods, but you go to these charity shop and you see it and it's very crowded, it's just tight, all the rest of it. And this coffee shop was like a proper coffee shop, not a lady putting a kettle on going, oh, do you want a cup of tea, love, or a cup of coffee. It's a proper barista style stuff going on, Pete.
Brilliant.
And the shop was clean, you know, it wasn't mothballed sort of charity shop. You're going, yeah, I'm in the charity shop. You know what I mean? It was clean, it was nice, there's people sitting there having the coffees and
well, people would want to go there, wouldn't
proper
they?
Warm food to eat as well.
Yeah, that's
lovely.
Super.
So we're trying to support them to just people to make donations and come and do stuff with it. So absolutely phenomenal. I put a picture out today regarding it and just the view from the front. Looks like a proper shop, not a charity shop. Looks like a proper shop. So really proud of that.
That's
and
brilliant.
The beauty is that it's helping all these different people in the community, because if you go out today, Pete, in Windsor, and you think, oh, I'm feeling a bit peckish, I'll go and get a coffee and I'll have a scone with a bit of clotted cream and jam. £5, £6, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It won't be that price in our coffee shop.
Mate, in Windsor, it'd be a tenner.
It'd be a tenner, yeah. It'd probably be a fiver in Leicester, if not less, mate. But you know, you can sit down with some of your mates, depending on your age.
Yeah.
And it's a meeting place as well, Pete, for people that want to meet other people of a certain age as well. And even the youngsters and students are using it. So I just want to bring you up to speed with that. We're at £17.98. Please make a donation to Memphis. I've given you the URL link. I'll put it onto the my page as well, and I'll put a tweet out about it during the week. That's me nattering for a while, Pete. So what do you want to go to, Pete, well, regarding your stuff?
I'll tell you what I will do. Bearing in mind that it's Wednesday the 17th of May and we're in the evening, Peter started off talking about the markets and saying how they've sort of, you know, they've been a little bit soggy. They've sort of been drifting, but it's been a very, I call it a turgid, directionless market. And that's really what we've had. When I look at my own portfolio, not so much today. Today's been pretty rubbish for me. I've had a lot of downs. But when I've looked most days during the last sort of week or so, there's been like a load down, but a load up, and no particular direction. It's all a bit higgledy-piggledy. But what I've just noticed tonight is that the US market is going absolute gangbusters tonight. Well, it's up 1.2%, which in relative terms recently is a strong push. And there's talk that they think a US debt ceiling deal is actually going to happen, which I find astonishing, because I really thought it would drag on and drag on and drag on and become a real pain in the ass. But it looks like a deal might be done. So that's some positive news.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
If that can happen, I think it could. I mean, I'm not expecting anything great for summer. I think we'll have this kind of really tedious, turgid market all summer. And as Peter said, I think we're going to have profit warnings and we're going to have takeovers and we're going to have. One of the things that I've got on my list to talk about is, have you noticed, Pete, the number of auditing problems recently? So many companies coming out saying, oh, our results are delayed because we've got a problem with an audit. I must have seen, God knows how many in the last few weeks. It's just been so much of it. Is that normal? I mean, you always get a few, but it seems like more than ever.
It seems like more than ever. I think because
have you noticed that?
I think maybe we're noticing more, Pete, but I think it's also more than ever.
Yeah.
Right? I put out, just as a joke yesterday, I put a joke out yesterday, Pete.
All right.
And it's a guy going to a corner shop or a shop, and he sees a sign on there from this company saying, accountant needed, 35 to 40, right? And he rings up the company and says, all right, mate. And the company replies, says, you said that you needed an accountant. You don't need an accountant, mate. 35 to 40 means that it's minus 5,000. Right, 35 to 40k means minus, but that's a joke of what the accountants. You don't need an accountant, but you do, because there's all this auditing stuff going on. You know, one of the companies that's meant to be safe and sound, one of the REITs came out the other day and said that the NAV was wrong. I forget which one it was actually, but the NAV had been calculated wrong for some reason. So
how can you calculate a NAV wrong?
You know, because of all the different incremental bits of the business, they'd calculate the NAV wrong. But The problem is, Pete, is that for me, whenever I see an accounting problem, I lose trust in the company.
Well, same here.
Yeah?
Same here, mate.
I'm thinking,
it's a big red flag. Yeah.
Amber to red. I'm thinking, what's going on here? They shouldn't be getting it wrong. They've got the CEO, they've got the CFO, and they've got an army of, remuneration committee looking at all the different other bits and pieces.
Mate, if you can't trust the numbers,
I'm a bit like woo-wah about that. On that note, Pete, and you touched on the profit warnings. I've got a few bits and pieces here, and
been a lot of that.
You've got Reach profit warned, Zitronic profit warned, Shoe Zone profit warned, International Greetings profit warned. Got a profit warning today from Washes of Switz. Is it Switzerland Group?
WOSG.
I think my one DLG.
I had one OTB yesterday. Disappointed.
OTB.
Yeah.
Restore. That's meant to be boring, just trickling along doing sort of stuff. Yeah. My one profit warned. So be very, very careful out there, folks. I said this months back, and I keep saying it almost every other podcast. Have a look at what the company's doing and how its peers are doing. Because some of these profit warnings, that you're going to get an absolute shellacking 15, 20, 25, 30%, and it's going to be a hit. And if you've got one of those companies and it's in your top three or top five, it's going to hurt. The thing that really irritates me about these profit warnings is that the individuals ordinarily that have been talking up this stock and talking up that stock, when they profit warn, I say this every time, and I know it pains people to hear me say it, that I'm doing this, they disappear on Twitter. They don't say that stock fell 15% and I hold it. They say, oh, and then disappear. Or they say nothing at all and disappear. And they don't mention the stock again. If you are an individual holding a stock and talking about it on a Thursday, Friday, or last month, and it profit warns, please show a bit of kindness to the people that follow you on Twitter and on social media and hold your hand up and say, I held Restore Group and it profit warned today and it's down 15%. It is your stock. Tell people about it when it goes up. It's your stock. Tell them about it when it goes down.
Mate, on that tone, I've got on the beach yet, OTB. Now, it's interesting with OTB because what I generally tend to find is that when a company has had difficulties and the share price has fallen, and then you find that it sort of bottoms out, and then they come out with some good news and it starts to improve, it's like you're away from a cycle of bad news and you're getting into a cycle of better news. Now, the really annoying thing about OTB is it was putting out better news, and then just yesterday or the day before, it's disappointed again. And that's quite unusual to be getting better and then to disappoint again. But I don't think it's unusual. I think I've got a feeling there was another one that did I can't remember which watch it was. I think another one I hold, actually, might have been MPAC, that's come out of better news today.
Yeah.
But I think it did exactly this before, where things have been difficult. The news was getting better, and then it disappointed again. And it's, I, in a way, to be fair to the companies, I think it's indicative of the environment we're in. I think, the situation is very challenging.
As I spoke to a lady that's head of a particular department in Interactive Investor just this week, and we were talking about the markets, and we're just inches away, mate, from a technical recession. Two quarters of negative growth, and we're in, and we're just on the cusp of it, and it's really, really difficult. And I think the problem we've got is that everyone's saying, a lot of people are saying, not everybody is saying, quite a significant number of the FinTwit individuals saying this, and even traders saying this is the most difficult market ever. No, it's not. You haven't seen difficult markets, mate.
They're all difficult.
This is really slow and turgid and nothing's really happening.
Yeah.
But it's not the most difficult market. It's not a case of the market, the whole share market is going wallop and it's down 15% in a day or 30% in a day or 15%, 20% in the course of a week. This is individual stocks getting wallop 15-30%.
Yeah.
The FTSE is nearer to highs. Yeah. 8,000 is our high.
Yeah.
8,047 was the intraday high.
Yeah.
We're at 7,000 and odd, 7,723 We're nearer to highs than we are lows. But it's your portfolio, my portfolio is doing okay, actually. But it's the portfolios that you've got and what's in your portfolio that's not doing so well, right? I've had a fair few profit warnings, but I've been blessed with a few stocks that have done reasonably well, in AstraZeneca holding up and a couple of takeovers.
Yeah.
But I've had a fair few profit warnings as well. And I talk about all of them all the time. All of them as they arrive, I talk about them. But significantly, Pete, I mentioned THG, which everyone hated, right?
Mm.
And I bought a load of it, and I exited it at the beginning of the month. And I raised a point which no one actually picked up on. And I didn't want to, you know, because when you sell something, when you hold something and it does well, and then you sell it whilst everyone else is just starting to buy it, or everyone else is saying, oh, THG is going to get taken over for more than £1.70 and probably £2 and £2.50. And Apollo's all over it. And Apollo's going to make this bid. And I was like, something doesn't feel right here. It's gone up from 40p to 60p to backwards and forwards. And I'm taking and trimming and buying and doing it. I'm doing all manner of different things. I've become a trader in that stock. And I said to people, this is now a trading chip for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it gets to £1.17-ish. And it's just flicking around like that. And then it gave up a pound. And I was like, whoa, down 20%. I'm out. And I'm watching the US banks, Pete. I'm watching the US banks. I'm watching the volatility in THG. And I'm going, Apollo, US banks, banking stuff, all a bit of a flux, US debt ceiling, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, I don't care if it's what is going to go. I had the sum of parts.
You just didn't feel good about it.
£2, yeah. Pete, when I first bought it.
Yeah.
And then SoftBank went, we're leaving the building at 39 pence. I was like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, that. Yeah.
It's worth 200. It's worth 2 quid. So I was like, whoa, something's not right yet. They took a massive hit of, I don't know, 450 million, I think, or something daft like that at the time. I can't remember the numbers precisely. Yeah. So it starts to go up because all this noise and all this, you know, Matthew Moulding's going to do that. £1.17, sub a pound, I'm going, I'm out. So I bails at more than 97.
Mm.
All the ebbing and flowing, I make 200% and I'm out. And I wrote
That's
it up
brilliant.
And I said to people, fantastic. My concerns are volatility and banks, US banks, right? Apollo's known for making bids, and it's a deep-pocketed private equity company. But also, sometimes they use some leverage, Pete. Mm. They're putting hardly any cash down.
Well, mate, they're using leverage. They're nearly always using leverage, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know what?
So if liquidity is seizing up in America, they don't have that freedom and that liquidity. They're not getting the same sort of pricing they can to borrow $1 billion here and borrow $1 billion there. They've got to pay more for that. So bear with me. So what happens is this, right? They end up bailing and saying, we are not going to buy THG. And the share price has gone from 90p down to, I'm not sure where it was today, but it went 60p yesterday or the day before last.
Yeah.
And the traders that are in stock haven't sold it, apparently. But it's gone from 120, 117 down to 60. Believe you me, a lot of the traders have sold it. Some of them will be hanging on, waiting for a bid coming up. And the bid might come. I do not know.
Yeah, but risky game.
They're now getting Apollo Capital, right? And now getting a bad reputation, Pete. This is what people don't pick up. You've got to track these things, right? Because they make bids and they're always opportunistic. Bear with me.
I was going to say,
they're always opportunistic. Bear with me.
Yeah.
They've walked away from Wood Group, and Wood Group fell 30-odd%, right?
Yeah.
They have walked away from Pearson, the publishing company, William Hill, RPC, the packaging group, right? Lots of companies have walked away from. They made 5 proposals for Wood Group up to £2.40.
Mm.
And then they walked away. And the share price now, instead of bidding £1.7 billion for Wood Group, the share price has now gone from £2.40 to £1.35. So you're sitting there and it's halved essentially because a bid came and the bid has now gone. So just be very careful if certain companies, private equity companies, come in to make a bid for your company, because the credit worthiness and the liquidity regarding capital markets isn't what it used to be. So there could be less bids and more bids that were ongoing not going through. Sorry, Pete, I took a bit of time there.
Mate, tying exactly to what you said, again, Ian King Sky News, they did a specific bit talking about this, and they said Apollo have done this time and time again. And but they said the incredible thing with, I think it was John Wood Group, they actually put in 5 offers, increasing the offers, and then they pull out. And it's like, the issue is, it's not just the fact that Apollo aren't making the deal and the deals aren't happening. The point is, it wastes so much management time. You know, just how much was their eye was taken off the ball in John Wood because they were having to respond to all these stupid questions from Apollo. I mean,
absolutely.
Mate, are we done on that subject?
Yeah. Sorry, I took a bit of time. I just want to just give the full flavour of it and warn people.
No, absolutely, mate. In line with our sort of vibe of doing a bit about a stock, then another kind of topic that's a bit more of a sort of relaxing topic, and then onto a stock, a market, whatever. I've been promising this for ages, and you listeners and you, Pete, are going to get it, right?
I need the toilet.
Hungarian midwives, mate. You're desperate. Right. Because of the delays that I've had and been able to talk about this, I took the liberty before this podcast of actually doing some research. Yes, believe it or not, doing some research. What it is, I found out about this on something I was watching on telly or whatever. I'm watching a lot of telly at the moment because I'm feeling pretty rough most of the time. There was this book review, and the book, I've actually looked up the name of the book. The book is called The Angel Makers, and it's by Patty McCracken, if anyone wants to actually get the book and read. I get the feeling it could be a very good book. Basically, what it is, it's actually an incredible story. I was blown away when I heard it. I mean, it's going to really fall flat now because I've built it up so much after all these months. Back in the 1920s, there was this midwife in like some sort of like real backwards kind of towns in Hungary, obviously, yeah. And what was happening was that you'd have loads of women were saying to this midwife, I'm having trouble with my particularly useless husband. And what was happening? Seriously, what was happening? This midwife was poisoning the bloody husbands and killing them. And they look, you can't believe it. And they reckon that this woman who was doing it could be one of the biggest serial killers in history. They reckon she could have done, I've got the numbers there, reckon she could have killed as many as 160 men. They've actually only got her nailed definitely for 35, because it got to the stage where they were just continually digging up bodies and testing if they had arsenic or whatever it was. And but mate, it was absolutely nuts. Because apparently this was happening in loads of like these little kind of villages in this Hungarian area, right? And what was happening, she was running it like a franchise operation where she was getting other women to do the murders in other towns as well. So it's like if you've got a particular, if you've got a drunken husband or a husband who batters you or whatever, well, we can sort the problem out for you. And they were doing all levels of service. It was like the person herself could kill them for you, or you could, she would give you the poison and you could do it. And, all these different business models as how to kill these men. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing story, but it's a warning to all you listeners out there. If your other halves are friendly with midwives or midwife men or whatever it is, if you want to be a little bit
don't
careful.
Have people thinking those sort of things, Pete. Oh, come on, mate, that's not nice.
It's nuts.
Oh, dude.
Can you believe what a mental story that is? It's like what
era are you talking here now? Years
1920s,
wise,
1920s,
1820s. All right. Oh,
no,
all right.
1920s. 1920s. I mean, it's not. Yeah, we're only talking 100 years ago. It's mad, isn't it?
200 years ago, mate. Oh, bye. Boy,
okay, it's
boy.
Not. It's not hippo.
That's spooky, mate.
It's not hippo.
That's spooky.
Blimey.
Yeah. Well, what am I now? 33 years in with my missus. I'm not sure which one of us wants to break free and be be released but not killed off, to be fair.
Which one's going to call the midwife first?
Oh my gosh. Oh, right. I'm not sure where to go with this after that, Pete.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I can throw one. Well, let's throw a quick one in, right? Powder Monkey Brewery. People can get 5% off if they order stuff from Powder Monkey. What's the website and stuff? I've no idea.
It's www.powdermonkeybrewing.com or .co.uk. I've got it in front of me because I forgot we were going to talk about that. Well, that's a very good point. We've got all these summer festivals, all these celebrations coming up, the weather's getting warmer, and so on and so on and so forth. And all you need to do is just go to the website, order your ales, beers, and so on and so forth, and you can get 5% off by putting into the box Twin Pete's into the box. And you get a 5% discount. Pete's already started making his orders. What did you get, Pete? Was it the 12 pack?
Yeah, I got like a box thing that had like loads. You could choose what you add in the box, which was a great way.
So the address is www.powdermonkeybrewing.com. They are the sponsor of the competition that we're running, the Twin Peaks Challenge Investing Competition, and I'll be speaking about the winner for April next after we've done this link. So you go to that, you can make a selection, and you get 5% off by putting the Twin Peaks name in the box, and you get 5% off, and that's on us. Right. Cool. Nat, thank you for the reminder for that one, Pete. Right. Can you do the drum roll, Pete, and a bit of music, whatever you want to do? Make some noise vocally.
That's a drum roll.
I can't
roll.
Hear that. All I can see is your screen moving, mate.
I'm whacking my... Right, let me hit it. Here's a drum roll. Right, okay.
Right. We have the winner for April. April's Twin Peaks Challenge Investing Portfolio winner is at NAQEEBN at Nanton, Cuba. Okay?
Yeah.
At NAQEEBN, you are the winner for April. Very well done. Congratulations. To you. Portfolio consists of Hemo, which is Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, InSig AI, Shield Therapeutics, Harbor Energy, and Deckel Agrivision, which all had a very, very strong April.
What's the code for
and
Shield
that person won with 17.7% for April.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
And, mate, this is the closest we've had. At shrimplin_Mike, 17.54% in Ooh. Second place.
That's close.
And our good friend that's always very supportive of us, Terry Vaughan. Nice Terry was 16.6% for April with another strong portfolio performance. Oof. So close, those three individuals there, Pete. So, Terry, keep going, mate. Mike, keep going. But, Nanqueep, I'll be in touch and send you a DM. We gave out the list before regarding books that you could buy. Some of them are, you can choose from, select one of. And obviously, in the running for all 15 of the books as well as our previous winners going forward. And obviously, we've mentioned some of those books already, including The Smart Money Method by Mr. Stephen Clapham, How to Pick Quality Shares by Mr. Phil Oakley, Gervais Williams, The Retreat of Globalization, Skeptical Investor by John Stepak, and many, many more that are on that list. You can choose one book because you're the winner for the month, and you'll also get 1 month's trial subscription to ShareScope as well as that other prize. Whilst we're talking about books, I'll be in touch with you, Nanqueep, so as well. So whilst talking about books, we've got to talk about it being publication day. Yesterday, 16th of May, was publication day for our good friend that was on the last show with us at on the Investing Matters podcast with me at Master Investor Show. Andy was on the show here at Twin Peaks 100. Algie Hall, the writer, the journalist, the quality shares investigator and analyst. Four Ways to Beat the Markets was released yesterday for publication.
Excellent.
Absolutely phenomenal book. I've been very, very blessed to have been asked by Algie to have a look at this book pre-publication and to look through his manuscript and give him some viewpoints regarding it being for investors. And I made some suggestions to it. And he's been very, very kind in adding me to the inside of the book in here regarding my quotes. And he did make some adjustments to the book from an investor's perspective, which I gave him. And this is what I wrote. And I put a tweet about it today after Algie commented about me helping him out with the book. And I wrote, this excellent book inspires and supports the investor to focus on what truly matters to consistently beat the market. At times, it felt like this book was personally written for me, the private investor. The beauty of psychology is wonderfully interwoven throughout, educating and reiterating its importance, enabling the reader to reflect and grow. And there's also quotes here from Stephen Clapham and also Rosie Carr, the editor of Investors Chronicle. But this is a really, really good book. I'm not just saying that. But if you want to screen and you want to find quality stocks and you want to work out the fundamentals and the balance sheet, and you want to have four ways to beat the markets, which I think we need about 24, to be honest, really, with the markets as they are now, Pete. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is definitely a really, really good book to purchase. And you can find that at Amazon via Harriman House and via Algie's website as well. So yeah, so get out there and do it. But folks, and I said this in podcast 100, and it's been running now for 2 weeks. Nobody has won it yet. There is the opportunity, ladies and gents, and I'll reiterate it. There's the opportunity to win one of these bad boys or bad girls books, yeah, for free. All you need to do is to reply to any tweet with the podcast link underneath it and say, Pete, Wheelie, thank you for the podcast. Enjoyed it, whatever you want to say. I think Algie Hall has written this number of books. Lots of replies so far.
How many books has Algie written, basically? Yeah.
How many books has Algie written? Yeah. Tell me how many he's written, and I will send this book to you in the post for free. Okay, ladies and gents, have a go. You could be up for this book. I will also be at the UK Investor Show on the 9th of June, which is a Friday, 9th of June, at the Queen Elizabeth II Conference, QE2's Conference Centre in Westminster. I'm going to be doing another Investing Matters panel session. I'm trying to remember all the names now. I have got Gervais Williams. I have got Stephen Yu. I've got Alex de Groot, who's a TMT tech analyst on the sell side. Really smart fella, been around for absolutely ever, works at various different brokers. I've got Gabrielle Boyle, senior individual researcher, former fund manager that works at Troy Asset Management. And I've got George Barrow from Polar Capital. Is that four? I've got five individuals anyway.
Sounds like a lot
on the panel.
More.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've got one more. I've got to remember what that person's name is. It escapes me at the minute. But we've got five individuals on the panel for that particular session. It's 10:30 in the morning on Friday. So get there early or miss out. We will be recording it as well for that particular show, but it's going to be absolutely an amazing show, because Gervais always delivers, Stephen Yu always delivers. I haven't seen a session from Alex before, and I haven't seen a session from Gabrielle Boyle, but George Barrow from Polar, we've done an Investing Matters with him already. I did do the five.
Is that show on a Friday and a Saturday?
Just a Friday. Going to be on a Saturday. It's been moved because of the strikes. It was meant to be on Thursday, on the 13th, Pete, which was last Saturday.
Yeah.
But it got cancelled because of the train strike. So it actually worked out better being on a Friday. So I can actually have my weekend back. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent.
Okay. Have you got a stock, Pete, you would like to share?
Mate, let me just throw something in fast. ChatGPT. Yeah, you know, the
Yes, yeah, generative
AI,
AI. Yeah,
the AI
generative
thing
AI.
that everyone's been on about. I just want to draw listeners' attention and whatever to some comments that Martin Sorrell made, and that in the S4 recent results, yeah. He basically talked about how AI was changing S4's business. Now, bear in mind, S4 is like a sort of marketing PR
I
advertising
own
kind
it,
of.
Pete, and it's been spanked and it's been horrible. It's sitting there
Yep,
just
yep, yep. But
creating a stink in my portfolio still.
Irrespective of what the share is doing, I'm not necessarily saying should you buy the share, shouldn't you? I'm just bringing your attention to what was written in that thing. And it's really interesting because he says there's four areas where ChatGPT is changing their business. Now, you can look in the results statement and see it yourself, but what it was really saying was things like they're using ChatGPT now to write marketing copy, advertising copy, whatever. And they're using it, like I say, for like, you know, for four different things. And I just thought it was incredible. And he makes the point, Martin Sorrell makes the point, that we are just in the foothills of what AI is going to do and just how immense and how massive it's going to be. And it's pretty obvious that this has the potential to really disrupt things so much. So I think,
does that mean it's going to be profitable at some stage, Pete? Who knows?
Well, who knows?
But there's trillions, absolutely trillions and trillions has already been pumped into
mega
trillions,
money.
Billions have been pumped
money.
Into it.
Yeah.
And they did some stats, and they're basically saying that at the moment, if you look at the actual incremental value that's been added to the likes of Microsoft and Google and some others, that valuation,
Nvidia
has added billions onto it since ChatGPT and generative AI was added to their offerings. The valuation of Apple has gone up. The valuation of Google has gone up. Microsoft.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
We'll have to wait and see, mate. But yeah, you're right.
There's some incredible things, because it's like, one of the things that's come up is difficulties around like the law, the legal sector. Yeah. Because one of the problems they got with ChatGPT is that it doesn't really produce text that would necessarily stand up in a court of law. So you couldn't use it at the moment as it is, you know, for instance, to produce a legal document, because it just, the way it's created is just so, I'm not saying it's lying, but it's not reliable. And I think that's obviously got a long way to develop. It's going to be really interesting to see not just how the technology advances, but how society and how regulation, all that, has to adapt to accommodate it, and what it means for jobs going and things. Because, I mean, if people like S4 at this early stage of it are already using it to write marketing copy, then what the bloody hell do you need people for? You know, you can see the potential.
Yeah, there's potential there, Pete, for creaming off and losing quite a lot of jobs. But the other argument is that they could generate and create quite a few new jobs.
Absolutely.
It's a really, really difficult one, mate. It really, really is.
I just think it'd be interesting for people to
watch.
Going, go and read his comments. It's right at the front of the results statement, and it's really interesting read.
Okie dokie. Right. I'm going to declare a stock, Pete. I don't want people to copy it. I've just said what I was going to do before was occasionally I was going to release some of the stocks that I'd bought from the monies that I've been taking off the table via AstraZeneca. And it's a stock that's changed its name, but it's more or less kept the same ticker. And it is another REIT. I think your battleship strategies ended up being quite close to it on one occasion. But I was like, oh, and you didn't quite say it, I don't think, Pete, but correct me if I'm wrong. But the stock that I'm going to release for you guys to go and research or hopefully ignore and just leave it alone to do its own thing is called Aberdeen European Logistics Fund. Yeah. And the ticker symbol is ASLI. Current NAV is £1. Current price is 80p. And it's yields 6%. And it is what it is, says on the tin. It's a sheds business, a European logistics for people to bring their stuff, leave it there, and it gets shipped and moved around Europe. You know, not mainstay in the UK, but in Europe. So that's what I've been adding. I've finished buying it now. It's going to be boring. It ain't going to go very far. And I'm just trying to not wait for somebody to come and impale AstraZeneca and hopefully generate 10% per annum, 6% via the yield and 4% in capital gains. And if I can get it nearer to £1, that will be 25% capital gains and hopefully 2 years of yield of another 12%. So that could give me 30%, 40% in 2 years if it moves and it starts to generate growth. The last bit of news going back to April 21st, NAV was down 7%, loan to value was up 25 to 34%. They've got a lot of their debts fixed at around 2%, and they don't need any more refinancing until 2025. I'm reading that from a tweet via Henry Viola, who also owns that stock, but he did not know that I owned it. But it's one that he owns as well. And I think there's a few others out there. I think Phil Sloan might have it as well. But it's one of them slow, boring toys for me. Good quality stock. And I'm not looking to blow the lights out. I'm just trying not to lose any money.
No, it's interesting. Looking at the chart, we've seen it on so many of these REITs that it's done the usual thing of dropping. It's now in that sort of sideways phase. It looks like it needs to get over 82 pence. It's on 80 now. Yeah. If it can break out above 82 and push on, that would be really sweet. Pete, what's your view of the sort of currency translation aspect to that? Because obviously it must report in euros, mustn't it? Or its business is going to be in euros. So what's your feeling on the Forex side of it?
If I'm honest with you, Pete, it's not something that's actually bothered me
about
it.
Yeah, you don't worry about it.
No, not in the sense, because I think the thing for me is I'm looking at, A, what are they buying and where are they buying it?
Yeah.
And is what's going on in Europe any continuity in growth? Yeah. Mm. And the last bit of really good news was actually they were selling, and there was all talking about, NAV's dropping on it, but the last thing that they sold, I think they sold at a premium to what they last booked it at.
Yeah.
So there's all these sort of transactions going on. So it's a stock. It's a slow, steady stock for me. But FX-wise, it's not something that I'm bothered about that much. I'm more interested in this one.
Very so
all the income. Yeah. It adds a little bit of diversification for me with the FX. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like I'm just trying to just get I've got the cash sitting there, Pete. Too much cash on my portfolio doing nout.
Yeah,
it's now generating 6%, Pete. I can't, it's generating six. If it doesn't go anywhere, if it doesn't go from 75p and just sits there between now and this time next year, I've generated 6%. The cash sitting there was generating diddly squat and making money for the platform and not for me.
Yeah.
So I'm now getting 6%. If it doesn't go below 75p, or less than that, I'm happy with all the different things. So yeah, so I just wanted to share that.
Yeah,
no, I advise everybody, cool, do not buy it, leave it alone, ignore.
Mate, I, because we're talking property here, I'm going to talk about a property one,
right?
And it's one that has impressed me for a long time, to be honest. But do you know what? I don't think I've ever owned it. I might have owned it 10 years ago or something, but certainly not recently. That's GRI Granger. Yeah, I don't hold it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think you mentioned it before now. Yeah.
Do you hold it?
No, I don't own it. No. You were trying, weren't you? I saw your little face in hope there, Pete.
No, you know, doing the old battleships. No, do you know what? I mean, it's just obvious to anyone with well, you don't have to have a brain, right? That politicians, the government, whatever, have been utterly useless at building houses. It's clear there is massive demand for houses for millions of reasons. It's fairly clear that whatever government gets in next, be it Labour or Liberal or whoever ends up running the country into the ground, whoever it's going to be, you know, they're not going to build enough houses. No one's going to build enough houses. And it's pretty obvious that a housing, you know, rental business is going to do pretty damn well. And the CEO of Granger, she's a lady. She appears on, I've seen her a load of times on that Ian King Sky News. She comes on and talks, and she always impresses me. And I always think, do you know what? I should buy shares in Granger. As one of the things to buy it, park it, you know, it's probably going to do pretty well. Mm. And you know, and you're going to sleep. It doesn't pay a massive yield. I think it only pays like 2.5% yield, something like that. So it's not fantastic on that score. But I think it's one of those where, you know, you've got potential for capital growth, and I think it'll do pretty well, really. What's your thought on that, mate?
I've looked at it before, Pete. I've looked at it's the sort of stock I've looked at before, and it ties in with the fact that more and more people are less able to purchase a property outright or even get on the property ladder. Yeah. So they're essentially a rental company, aren't they? Property and then rent it out.
Yeah.
They tend not they rent vast majority rather than selling. Is that right?
Yeah. They don't sell. They
don't sell. So I've got the right company. Yeah. So they basically get it built and then they rent it out and they generate their income out of it. And then if they get to the point where they think that area has peaked, then they sell that off. Yeah, and they reinvest it and recycle it and do another building in another area up and coming and so on and so forth. So they've been around for a good while. You know me, I love companies that have got female CEOs.
Absolutely.
Because they tend to be a bit more savvy, a bit more patient, and tend to want to prove a point, you know, regarding what they're doing. And over the long term, Pete, they outperform the male CEOs that are in the same sector or across any sector. If you're going to go in for that company, you could do your research on it and you're happy with the share price at some point. And, you know, the reason why it's paying a low yield, Pete, is because it's probably going to end up giving you better capital gains than the company that's paying a bigger yield, potentially. You know, what's the debt situation with them, Pete? Because I don't know that side of it.
From memory, I think I think it's got a bit of debt kicking around, but I'll tell you what I am looking at as we were talking. It's stuck in my mind. It's got a really good history of raising the dividend, yeah? And I'm just looking on SharePad.
You're looking for progressive dividend, Pete, policy.
Forward dividend of 2.5%, but expected to rise to 2.9% the following year. And if you look at the history of it, I mean, in terms of the dividend, from 2019, it paid 5.2p, 5.5p, 5.2p, 6p, 6.4, 7.5, 8.1. Sorry, those last three are predicted ones. But, you know, but it's totally believable that it will keep raising the dividend. So even though it doesn't appear to be the biggest dividend on earth at the moment, you're getting near 3% next in 2024. The chances are it's going to keep raising that dividend, and I think that's what I would expect.
Okie dokie. I'm going to throw a speculative one out there as my last, you know, of the evening. Then we might call it, well, you should call it a day.
Yeah, we need to call it then, mate. Yeah.
And this is linked into eventually regarding the electrical vehicles, electrification of the infrastructure and so on and so forth. Is this very speculative, people? So if you are going to go anywhere near it, look out for the landmines, because this could be, you know, a high risk one to actually research and go into. Yeah. And this is not a company that most people would have heard of, other than the people that only go for speculative stuff on AIM. And this is called Tirupati Graphite.
Yeah, TRP.
TRP. It's got a market cap of 33.7 million as we speak now. Share price, 31.5 pence. The range for the last 12 months is 21.5 pence to 66 pence. And essentially, I know lots of people go poo-poo about the net zero sort of targets and the economy and da-da-da-da-da-da. But anything to do with electrification and electric vehicles and infrastructure, at some point or other, you're going to need some graphite. It's not all about copper.
Sorry.
It's not all about lithium.
I misled you. It's not TRP. It's TGR.
Sorry. It is TGR.
Sorry, people. Yeah.
So TGR is the ticker, and it's a graphite company. And the reason why this one's on my radar, Pete, and the reason why I'm sending it out there for people, is actually most miners, are exploration.
Mm.
This is a producer. It actually produces it. It's actually digging it up and selling it. Yeah, it's actually generating revenue. Yeah, so this is why I'm mentioning it.
Do they dig up graphite? Can you do that? Is graphite something you dig up? Or is graphite made from carbon?
It's something
a
you dig up,
thing, is it?
And refined.
Right. You have to refine it from an ore. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Mate, that's got the same CEO as DKL, DKL Agrivision.
I didn't know that. I've not looked into it deeply enough, Pete.
No, I know that.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no,
say to people, tiny little company, highly speculative.
Yeah.
Have a little look at it. I'm not tipping it. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying it's producing graphite. Lots of miners out there are just producing placings, right? One after the other every 6 months.
This is actually
producing and revenue generating. And it's got an opportunity there. Yeah, looking to, we've written this down here. If it continues expansion and aims to achieve a total capacity of 80,000 tons across its projects by the end of 2022, with the lowest operating expenditure outside of China. So Madagascar. Up and running, producing high quality graphite. So have a look. Have a look and see what happens. You know, 31.5 pence. And we'll see what happens from there. That's me done. Please, 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 people, subscribe to YouTube. Please, please, please make a donation to the Memphis Just Giving page. And thank you all for your feedbacks for the Twin Peaks 100, which was celebrated. Thank you all for supporting it so well and giving us record numbers for a year, I think 12 months. This is the highest numbers we had. Within 12
months.
That's
been brilliant. Yeah, been brilliant.
Bruce taking our average up from 2.5. We're on the way to getting 4,000 for the last particular one. It's only me and Pete this time. It'd be lovely if we get good numbers for just me and Pete, but I don't expect it. It would be nice.
I think for the time that it's been released, this is probably the highest response we've ever had. Because bear in mind, the one we've had before that's had a higher number of listeners and viewers, that one's been out for some time. And thankfully...
2021 is when we hit that 5,600 one. It was a very early one.
And people,
well, I say early.
People do look through the archives and listen to old ones. So if you're a new listener or whatever, if you're an old listener and you just want a refresher, you know, looking at some of the older episodes is probably worth doing, because there's a lot of stuff that is of an educational nature, not just specific at that time kind of thing.
Absolutely. 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 And if you are around London area on the 9th of June, please, please, please pop down to the QE2 in Westminster, and I'll be there with the London South East and the Investing Matters team and a host, five absolutely phenomenal guests. So please come and have a look, and it'd be lovely to meet you. And I will have Algie's book there as well. Yeah, Algie's book. You can buy one, or you can come down and tell me how many books he's written, and I'll just hand it over to you, as you've told me. You can only guess once, though. Don't keep coming back to me all day saying a particular number. One guess, then off you pop. All right, folks.
Brilliant.
Thank you ever so much for joining Wheelie and I on Twin Peaks Investing Podcast, number 101, room 101. And we'll see you, ladies and gents. I think we'll be in June.
Oof. Wow.
Next one will be recording in June.
Where does
and
it go,
congratulations
mate?
To Nanqueeb winning the month of April.
Well,
and by the time we come into June, the next podcast, we might just be done all the stats, crunched all the numbers to announce the winner for May. So I wish you well. Hopefully your five picks have done well so far and you're in the running for winning the May competition. Okay, folks. Really, any closing bits to say?
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Okay. Take care, everyone.
Cheers.
Enjoy the good weather when you can and get out, get some clean air and support whoever you can in the community. Take care and God bless you all.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.